Good afternoon. How are you doing? I'm good too. Thanks for asking. My name is John, and I'll be your host for this show of, it's called Under Scorching Skies, and this is the summertime edition of our star show. So we'll be bringing up the stars and learning all about the sky and astronomy and related topics like that. One note, if you have any devices that make light or sound, we would appreciate it if you kept them off for the duration of the show, as they can be distracting. I might be throwing out a couple of vocab words throughout this show, but don't worry, there's no test, and there'll be other things that I might ask you, so feel free to call out any answers that you know, and if you have any questions for me, you can ask them, or I'll also be around after the show to field any other questions. So right now we're looking at the sky as it would possibly appear tonight under cloud conditions like this. And the first vocab word I actually want to throw out is ecliptic. This is a theme that I'll be returning to in this talk. And the ecliptic is actually just the line through the sky that the sun appears to pass through over the course of the year. And you can see that the ecliptic is also kind of like a giant calendar, so that our sun is over in late June. That's where the sun is in late June. And so the sun, or as the Earth works through its orbit, the apparent direction in which we see the sun just works its way along this giant calendar. It gets its name because our solar system is more or less a disk, and so all of the planets and the moon also appear along this line. So we can see that even if in daytime, if we could see the planets and the moon past the glare of the sun, they're all just out there. Mercury and Venus will be preceding the sun down before sunset. Jupiter and the moon will be following it. And when the moon crosses directly in front of the sun, that's an eclipse. That's a solar eclipse, and that's why this line gets its name. So we'll be returning to that in a little bit, but right now, let's speed up time a little bit and cause the sun to set and see what we can see in the night sky. So the sun will set and some things will begin to appear in the evening sky. We saw that Jupiter will be following the sun down into the northwestern horizon tonight. We can just catch it after sunset if we have a good horizon. There it is. And as it gets darker, stars and other things, the other planets appear in the sky. The first thing that we're going to do in this show is to get our bearings, getting our sense of direction, because we need to have our sense of direction in order to be able to find our way around the sky to find out where things are. And we do that with patterns of stars, like constellations. Anybody recognize any patterns in the sky right now? Any familiar ones? The Big Dipper. Maybe, did somebody say the Little Dipper as well? These are two very familiar patterns, and the Big Dipper is very prominent in the northern sky right there. It's those seven bright stars that connected together form a shape like a big pan, big spoon. So that's our Big Dipper. And the Big Dipper is useful because it's always in our sky, even in daytime. Any time of day or night, any time of year, given good sky conditions, we can find the Big Dipper, because it's in the northern sky. And then we can use the Big Dipper as kind of a waypoint to find other things in the sky. So the most familiar way, to use the Big Dipper to find our sense of direction, is a very useful little trick. And it goes like this. Look for the front two stars of the Big Dipper's cup and imagine drawing a line through those stars and extending that line out above the cup and keep going until you run into another star of similar brightness. And that star that we've found is a very important star in our sky. Not because it's particularly big, particularly close, but because of where it appears to be in our sky. It's almost directly above the Earth's north pole. For that reason, it bears the name the North Star as its common name, and its scientific name is Polaris. So if you are on the North Pole and you look straight up, that's the star that you would see, and as the Earth turned, all of the other stars would appear to rotate around it. So having found the North Star, we know that when we face that star, we're facing the direction north. Then we can easily figure out which directions are east, west, and south. So east is to our right, west is to our left, and south is behind us. So now we've got our sense of direction. Let's find some other star patterns. The North Star is part of what pattern? Who knows? I heard an Ursa Major. The North Star is actually part of Ursa Minor, but it's more familiarly known as the Little Dipper, and it goes along with the Big Dipper. So to find the Little Dipper, once you've found the North Star, arc from the North Star back around toward the handle of the Big Dipper until you find a pair of stars of similar brightness to the North Star. So we'll arc back toward the handle of the Big Dipper, and here's our two medium bright stars. And those stars are the front of the cup of the Little Dipper, and the North Star is the end of its handle. It's a dimmer constellation, dimmer star pattern than the Big Dipper. Caught myself, almost said constellation, but it's not one of those. Because it has these four dim stars that finish out the rest of the handle and the rest of the cup. So there's our Little Dipper. Now each of these, I've been trying to be careful to say, are not constellations. They're informal patterns, but they're both part of constellations. And somebody knew Ursa Major. The Big Dipper is actually a part of Ursa Major, and Ursa Major is a big constellation. So while the Big Dipper is very familiar to most of us, Ursa Major is less familiar. I'll show you how to find it. Ursa means bear, but unlike real bears, this bear has a tail, or it is imagined to. And the handle of the Big Dipper is the bear's tail. And the bear's back continues across the top of the cup out to jump one more star, about an equal distance. Again, that's the bear's shoulder. And to find the bear's nose, it's one more jump to another dim star. So the bear's head would be in this region, and the bear's back along here, and the bear's belly continues along the bottom of the cup, jump one more star out. So that's the bear's body. And the bear has three claws, and each claw is a pair of stars close together. So from the shoulder, we can hop down, and find a front claw. And from the hindquarters of the bear, we can jump down, find a back claw, and then through some dim stars, perhaps over here, to find the third claw, the other back claw. Putting that all together, you might just connect the lines and get that. Doesn't look a whole lot like a bear, does it? The tail is really what throws you off, but there are myths and stories about how bears lost their tails that relate to this constellation. Apply a little bit more imagination and you can come up with something like this. So there's our great bear, Ursa Major. The little bear, Ursa Minor, is not as involved or complex of a constellation. It's actually just all the same stars as the Little Dipper. And like the Big Bear, the Little Bear also has a long tail. The handle of the Little Dipper is the bear's tail. And maybe a leg comes down here, a back right there, another leg, and then a head off in that region with not any bright stars in it. So somebody put their efforts to drawing a little bear, and they came up with this. I'm not sure how successfully they captured a spirit of a bear there. But maybe that's our little squirrel or little skunk or something. Now, we've got our bears and we've got our dippers. Let's switch back to the dippers because they are useful as signposts. There's another constellation in this region that is perhaps lesser known, but it's one of my favorites. Because running right between the two dippers is a row of stars, right there. And that row of stars is part of a mythological animal, or mythological monster, and this row of stars continues up and around in just a long S shape around the back of the Little Dipper, and it curves back right there, and out to a little kite shape of stars. That remind any of you of some kind of monster or animal? That one, it's like a snake. Good guess. That one is a dragon, right? And it's the constellation Draco. Let's connect the dots. There's how you might imagine Draco, or if you're more artistically inclined, you might come up with something like that. And now let's go outward from the Big Dipper and find some other things. There are other places that we can go from the Big Dipper. We can follow the handle of the Big Dipper in an arc. So imagine just tracing an arc through the handle. Take a little bit of a left turn. And the way to remember this is arc to Arcturus. And Arcturus is a red giant star. It's not huge, but it's a large star, and it's quite bright in the sky. It comes out early in the evening. And Arcturus is part of a constellation called Bootes the Herdsman. A bit of an abstract constellation that maybe is hard to remember. But notice that Arcturus is in this area where it's part of this triangle of stars that we can recognize. And on top of the triangle is a loop of stars. What would be a figure that would be like a ball on top of a triangle? Ice cream? Ice cream. So we arc to Arcturus to get to our ice cream cone, and that's a great way to remember this part of the sky. Just arc from the Big Dipper over to that ice cream cone. And one more hop after arcing to Arcturus, you can spike. Let's try that again. One more hop after arcing to Arcturus, you can spike on down to a star called Spica. So arc to Arcturus and spike to Spica. And Spica is in a constellation called Virgo. It's a springtime constellation. So as summer winds on, it will be setting earlier and earlier and gradually fade from view, no longer be visible in the sky. It's already getting down to the west quite a bit. But in Virgo is the planet Mars right now. This bright red star is the planet Mars. So we arc to Arcturus and spike on to Spica, and that takes us to Mars. And if you go out in the evening, Mars is actually quite piercingly bright. It's a beautiful sight. Also, if you've got a pair of binoculars or a modest telescope, it's beautiful to look at through those as well. We'll be able to take a closer look at that in a minute. And just in case you're wondering what the heck Virgo is supposed to be over there, this abstract line drawing, it's depicted as a woman, but she's sideways. And the way that I tend to imagine it is that she's got an arm raised up here and an arm raised up here, and her head is just in this area without any bright stars, and her body comes down here, and there are her legs. So that's Virgo. Virgo, as I was saying, is not going to be with us in our evening skies for very much longer, because Virgo is a seasonal constellation that is best viewed in the springtime. And so now we're getting to almost around behind us, where we can start to look at the seasonal constellations. And rather than, I think, having you turn your seats around, because I think they're anchored to the floor, so that usually doesn't work out too well, let's do another thing here. Let's turn the sky around so that we can look at the other half of the sky. So this is just like picking up our chairs and turning them right around. So now we're going to look to the south and see what's in our southern sky. Right away, we see in our southern sky this bright cloudy region. All this here. What's that? Why are there clouds? Milky Way, I heard it, yeah. Yeah, summertime is the time of the year when, along our ecliptic, when we look out into space, we're actually looking into the center of our galaxy. And so summertime, at least for us up in the northern hemisphere, in the southern hemisphere it's their winter, but in the northern hemisphere, summertime is the time that we really look forward to doing some astronomy, because there's a lot of interesting things in the sky as we look into the Milky Way. And the patterns of stars that we look through when we look in that direction are a couple of bright ones, like these stars right here. And this is a constellation that is imagined as a scorpion. This is Scorpius. So this bow of stars out front, those are perhaps the claws. And the body of the scorpion comes back here. This bright star is Antares, the heart of the scorpion. And that's one of the largest stars that we know of. If you took Antares and plopped it down in the center of our solar system, it would subsume all of the planets out to Mars. It's really a monster. Well, the scorpion continues down this way, in a curve back around to two stars very close together that represent the pincher of the scorpion. So we can just connect the dots like that. Or see an artist rendition of the scorpion. Between Scorpius and Virgo right now is a bright point of light that you'll be able to see in the evening soon after sunset. Right here, the planet Saturn. So we've got now three planets that we can see in our evening sky right now. Jupiter if we can just catch it right after sunset, and then Mars and Saturn are well placed. And I said I was going to get back to this thing called the ecliptic. And you might notice how these planets all seem to be in a line. You could just imagine that line, and the sun would have set down over here, so Jupiter would be along that line over there. And indeed, there's our ecliptic line again. And if we were to go up above the solar system and look down at it all. So there's the Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. If we could look down at our solar system, we would see that the ecliptic is actually the plane of the disk of the solar system. And here we are on Earth. It's nighttime for us, so we're facing this direction, if you could imagine yourself standing on that ball right there. And we can see that the sun is behind us, so we can't see it. But over in this direction is Mars, and Mars is in our sky. Bring in a few more planets, Jupiter and Saturn. We see that we've already left Jupiter behind. Jupiter is kind of toward the sun. And indeed, when we looked in the sky, Jupiter was very close to the sun. But Saturn is also well placed to see at nighttime. So if you can ever look at a picture of the solar system in a desktop planetarium program or on the internet or something, just this one picture is very useful to know where things are. And there's Venus. We can't see Venus at night, but as we turn, as the Earth turns around, as we approach sunrise, it will come into view. We can do some fun stuff with our planetarium too and take closer looks at some of these interesting things that we're learning about. So now let's do some fun stuff and take a trip out to some planets. Imagine yourself just in a rocket ship. And we'll blast off from Earth. And head out to Saturn. It'll come up quite quickly. Here we are, out at the planet Saturn. Sixth planet from the sun, and the second largest planet in the solar system. These outer planets are not rocky like the inner planets, but these are the gas giant planets. And they are positively huge. You could fit the Earth over 9 times across, straight across there. But the name gas giant is a little bit misleading because Saturn and Jupiter are actually mostly made of liquid hydrogen and helium because the density is so great that once you get under that top layer of clouds, it's liquid down there. The outer planets are also a lot like many solar systems in a solar system. Because they have moons. They have a whole lot of moons. Jupiter and Saturn each have over 60 moons. And we'll just do a couple of quick highlights. So one of Saturn's famous and most interesting moons is this hauntingly beautiful one, Enceladus. And Enceladus is covered in a thick layer of ice. But below the ice, we now know that there is an ocean of liquid water, heated by the planet's core. So Enceladus is a top candidate for future exploration to go out and find whether there is some kind of life, bacterial life, or perhaps some rugged kind of life that could survive in that in a high-pressure ocean deep under the ice of Enceladus. And another of Saturn's moons, this is a fun one, this is Mimas, just a rocky, icy moon, kind of looks like our moon, but it's got this great big crater, and for that reason it's affectionately known as the Death Star Moon. So sometimes art and nature coincide. I guess you be the judge about that one, but it does amuse me. What about those rings? Let's fly in there. They look solid from far away, but if you go right into them, they're not solid at all. They're made of chunks of ice and rocks and dust. And some of these chunks of ice are smaller than a closed fist, and some of them are larger than a house. And there are millions and millions, probably over billions of them. And new moons occasionally form from the rings, so the theory says. Just a month or two ago, there was a press release that a new object was seen emerging from the rings that it is believed is a brand new tiny moon that has formed from all these chunks coalescing. So they're a dynamic place. The rings are not a permanent feature of Saturn. They've only been there for a couple of 100,000 years. They may only survive for another couple 100,000 years, if I remember the figure correctly. I need to do one more thing here. We're going to jump back to Earth and then visit Mars, because I skipped Mars. I was going to do that first. So let's take our trip to Mars. Ah, here we go. Stars turn as we point our rocket ship of the imagination. And Mars will come up quite quickly as we approach it. And here we are. This is what Mars looks like if you could get close to it. With a modest telescope, you can just see hints of coloration in polar ice caps. But now that we've sent some robots and satellites out there, we can get detailed pictures like this. You'll notice it has two tiny moons. They're actually asteroids that were captured in its gravity. Mars is a small planet. It's the next planet out from Earth, but it's only about half the size of Earth, and so it has lower gravity than Earth. If you were there, you would only weigh about one-third of what you weigh on Earth. So that would allow you to run faster, jump higher, but most importantly, to carry the heavy spacesuit that you would need to survive on the surface of Mars. And that's not an entirely outlandish idea. People may go there within our lifetime. We notice polar ice caps. Mars has small polar ice caps made mostly of carbon dioxide ice. There's some water ice in there as well. But it also has some of the largest features, the largest geological features in the solar system. Because of its small size, geological features are not pulled down by gravity. So here's a canyon system called Valles Marineris. That's about as wide as the whole United States right there, and four times deeper than the Grand Canyon. It's positively enormous. And these circular features, Arcea, Pavonis, and Ascrius, and Olympus Mons, some of the largest mountains in the entire solar system. They're dormant supervolcanoes. Olympus Mons, for example, is over 3 times taller than Mount Everest. It's so tall that its top pokes right outside of Mars's atmosphere into outer space. And we know that there was once a liquid ocean on Mars long, long ago. And so this is one of the compelling reasons that we're sending robots to explore Mars and why Mars is such a big deal. Because where there's water, maybe there's life. Maybe there was life in the distant past. And maybe there is still life. Maybe something can survive in that harsh environment. So someday, hopefully we'll know. Hopefully we'll be able to do a lot more exploring on Mars with robots, and then someday humans can go there. Now let's get back to our night sky. Here we are at about 4 a.m. And Scorpius has just dipped below the horizon. So we're still facing south, and Scorpius is all the way down here now. And here's our Milky Way. And right in the direction of the Milky Way is a very famous star pattern. It's actually a constellation called Sagittarius, but most people don't have too much luck recognizing Sagittarius as a thing that looks like an archer, which is what it's supposed to be like. But it actually does look a whole lot like a teapot, and it's this group of stars right here with the kettle, the pot right there, a handle, a spout, a top, a spout, and a handle. Very well-recognized and beloved star pattern there, Sagittarius. And as we look in this direction, as we look into the Milky Way, summertime is also the season of things called globular clusters. And the globular clusters surround our galaxy and infuse its core. There are a couple hundred of them. And I'll show you what a globular cluster looks like. Going to throw up another vocab word, globular cluster, there. And a globular cluster, oh dear, I put it too low. But a globular cluster is a group of hundreds of thousands of stars. In the biggest one, as many as a million stars, all in a tight ball. And these are some of the oldest stars in our galaxy, and they didn't coalesce down into the plane of the disk of the galaxy. They're kind of scattered about randomly all over the place. These dots represent where all of the globular clusters are. And the last thing that I would like to do is to now take a step back from the Milky Way and see it from a distance, and see our place in the Milky Way from a distance. So we'll get in our rocket ship again. And fly many times faster than the speed of light. Look at our own galaxy, or what we think our galaxy would look like from a distance, because we can only actually see a tiny portion of the galaxy. But by comparing it to other galaxies, scientists have figured out what it would look like. And we can see that the globular clusters are not mostly in the disk of the galaxy like all of the other stars. They're kind of scattered in a halo. And this circle is centered on the sun. We're out here in the Orion Arm. This area of the galaxy is called the Orion Arm. And when we look into the night sky, all of the stars that we can see are contained in a radius of about that size circle. And as we look into the galaxy, when we see that faint glow of the Milky Way, we're actually just looking at the next arms in. And those stars are so far away that we don't make them out as individual stars, but we see them as just a diffuse glow. Because the Milky Way galaxy has between 1 and 200 billion stars in it. And on a good night, the human eye can see maybe a couple thousand. And our most powerful telescopes can see a few million stars. But there are hundreds of billions of stars in the Milky Way. And it's now known that there's 1,000 times more other stuff in the Milky Way than stars. Stars light up, they're bright, so we can see them. But there's a lot of other stuff out there. There's gas, and there are more planets than stars in the Milky Way. So if we had the means and the technology to go out and actually explore our galaxy, that means that there are hundreds of billions of worlds in this area right here. I've circled one more feature in our sky, a feature that is best viewed in autumn, so it'll be well placed a little later on. One of the closest galaxies to us, not the closest, but the largest of the closest, is the Andromeda Galaxy, about 2.5 million light years away. So as you think about light speed, that means that the light that we see from Andromeda left that galaxy 2.5 million years ago. As in, we're seeing a snapshot that old of that galaxy. And the Milky Way and Andromeda are on a slow collision course with each other. And something like 10 billion years in the future, they will perhaps merge into a single supergalaxy. Jury's still out on whether that will happen. That's a very difficult thing to predict. But that's what they say about the future. We've got one more planet that we can see. So let's turn on the stars again. Back in Grand Rapids, and this time I'll speed up the clock again, allowing the sun to rise. And as the sun rises, we'll be able to see the morning star, as it's known. But the morning star is actually the planet Venus. So maybe some of you have noticed it on a drive into work. Preceding the sun into the sky as the sun rises, and then being washed out by the glare of the sun. So that's it. We've now done a full night's worth of astronomy. And so I thank you all for your attention, your questions. And if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them after the show. But I thank you. And if you're interested in seeing some of these things in real life, there are opportunities throughout the summer out at the Veen Observatory with the Grand Rapids Amateur Astronomical Association. Hosts visitor nights every second and last Saturday throughout the summer. So you can go to one of those and look through telescopes and see some of these things in real life. We were washed out by rain last night, but there are a number of them left throughout the year. So thank you very much. That's the end. You can exit through this door right here.